Bob, when we renew our contract this year, I'm going to add a new demand.
Oh, really?
Yes. Since our live podcast, I realized that I am a thespian. I love the stage.
Okay.
We need a live audience.
In here?
I'm inspired by relating to the public as a performer.
In this studio.
I need the pulse of real people here to feel alive.
Where are they all going to sit? On Jake's lap?
Normally, I'd say more the merrier, but I've just got my lap and my hands full right now. Please stop crying.
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them. Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! God is helping!
We are the wild and pretty guys!
Well, they're both festive, aren't they?
Joyeux Noël!
And we are the Festive Foreign Film Fans, plus one. Mark, guess what? Who's back?
Who's back?
It's Jakey.
Jake, we missed you so much.
He's taking back the controls.
Thank God, because that guy who was here those last two episodes, I don't know if he knew what knobs were like.
Who the heck? I think they got somebody off the street. He kept spilling his alcohol in the monitor thing.
I think at one point we asked for our theme song.
That was after you had to go wake him up.
I mean, listening to us, I got to give him a break.
Well, Mark, I think you have something special for Jake, don't you?
I do. You know what, Jakey? We thought it was great how we introduced Lorelei to the fans last time, but I think you need a festive foreign film fans Lorelei. Here we go.
When we think of Lorelei, the festive fans do cheer. To her health and happiness, we raise a glass of beer. We call her on her Elmo phone just to say hi. And to remind her, we are her Uncle Festive Guys. When she poops, yeah, she poops.
I gotta say,
Lorelei, let's fill up that diaper. It's 2 a.m., Jake, you need to change her. Lorelei, you are a precious baby. Will Tori and Jake sleep? Well, maybe. Lorelei.
Woo! Lorelei. Now, that is way better than anything Styx ever did.
I thought so, too.
Yes.
Dennis DeYoung has a lot of things on me, like a good voice and money, but other than that, Breakles.
I just wonder how she's going to feel with us just following her around everywhere she goes, just breaking into song.
I guess the first time we meet her, we probably shouldn't dress as like Krampus or dressed like a goat.
Not yet. She has something to look forward to.
But we're excited to have you back, Jake.
We are excited to have you back. In fact, all we can think about is celebrating and festivities.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's August and we've put our Christmas in July and our 4th of July celebrations behind us, we're now going to start to plan for the big day.
Oh.
No. Not Christmas.
No.
Even bigger.
Thanksgiving?
No.
Halloween?
No. I am talking about the semi-quincentennial.
What?
I mean, we just passed our 249th birthday of America last month, Mark. So we need to start aggressively planning for July 4th, 2026, because I don't want all those decorations to sell out.
Right.
It's the 250th birthday of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And we got to have a party, don't you think? I mean, I'm working on invitations now. I just want to know, are you free that night?
I'm going to probably have to check my calendar, but I'll look. Maybe.
But think about this. I mean, semi-quincentennial doesn't sound like much fun. So
no.
I was thinking we could also go with bicentennial, sestercentennial, or just a plain quarter millennial. And I want to know, what do you think would look better on a t-shirt?
Oh, geez. Maybe none of those.
Quester millennial? I like that.
Yeah, Quester millennial. I think the younger generation may adopt that quicker.
I am not going to go with your typical red, white, and blue party.
No.
No, no, no. What I'm thinking is we have our own hot colonial pool party.
Whoa.
Well, think about that.
Okay.
Powdered wigs.
Nice.
Sexy breeches.
Very nice.
Some very revealing waistcoats.
Whoa.
And I'm thinking like party games. And I want anyone to suggest party games, but these are the ones so far I've come up with.
Okay.
Benedict Arnold Pinata. Mm. Hamilton and Burr Nerf Duel Battle.
Very nice.
And pin the Sally Hemings on Thomas Jefferson.
That last one's my favorite.
And I'm thinking we could get some cornmeal porridge canapes, some venison, maybe some rabbit medallions. We can have some refreshing turnip, parsnip, and molasses salad. And then also, I'm thinking to get some posset. You know, posset. Who doesn't love curdled milk and ale, especially on a hot July day?
So, Bob, is it possible? I'm just throwing out there. I'm making no accusations or anything. But, I mean, what have you been drinking?
No, Mark, this is exciting. Come on. It only comes around every 250 years. I mean, seriously, I want us to learn Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's famous poem, Paul Revere's Ride, and we are going to recite it together as a duet.
Whoa.
And I think I want both of us to get 250 tattoos, mostly small eagles, maybe some Uncle Sam's, appropriately placed Betsy Ross. But think about this. Washington crossing the Delaware across our whole back. But this is the best part. It could be you and I and Jake rowing the boat. Wouldn't that be great?
Why can't I be standing on the front of it like George Washington?
No, George is there, but we're the ones rowing the boat. How about that? I think that would be awesome. I also, with our pool party, we're going to throw in 250 Lipton tea bags into the pool.
You know, Bob, I actually did cross the Delaware, Washington did, in a kayak.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, when I lived in Pennsylvania.
Well, shoot, get that picture. Yeah. We'll use that one.
We could do that. I don't want to rain on your parade here, but I think you're going the wrong direction with this.
Yeah, but I was going to ask your son Brian to brew us some Ye Old Founding Fathers Fermented Folly. He could call it a brew bold enough to start a revolution.
It is very noteworthy that you would pick up on it a year in advance. When will the invitations go out? I just want to know how many weeks I have to come up with an excuse not to be there.
Oh, I was going to send them out in the next couple of weeks. I just want to make sure people don't have their vacations booked or anything.
We're on a month-long cruise next June, July, August.
Mark, it's going to be the next revolution.
I'm going to go hide my basement.
I'll give you a powdered wig to take with you.
Yes.
Speaking of Independence Day, tonight we are visiting a country that is currently having its independence threatened by, of all places, the United States.
Uh-oh.
Yes. We are heading to a beautiful Arctic location surrounded by glaciers, icebergs, fjords, and mountains. And it is a country where the sun does not set from May 25th to July 25th. And July is the only month when the temperature reaches above freezing. Can you guess where we're going?
I know where we're going.
We're going to Greenland.
Nice. Woo-hoo-hoo! That's shocking.
I know. All of that.
The daylight piece, I know because I was in Alaska in the summer.
Well, and as we'll get in when we talk about the movie, snow everywhere. Yeah, there was just lots of snow. But before we head out to Greenland, can't wait to get there. We have to return to that graveyard in Luxembourg. Remember from last episode?
Yes.
There was a famous U.S. military officer buried there. And if you remember, we talked about how Luxembourg is the size of the Dallas metro area.
Right.
It is small. Dynamic. It is a small country. So it's pretty amazing when you hear who it was who's buried there, and all those who sent in get their sticker. I wish we had a sticker with his face with us on it. We don't, though.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Like him endorsing us?
Yes. We are talking about General Patton. General Patton is buried there.
And this is great.
He wanted to be buried there because these were his officers. These were his soldiers who died there in the Battle of the Bulge. And he wanted to be buried with them, which is great.
Was the Battle of the Bulge in Luxembourg? I don't even know. I feel dumb not knowing the answer to that.
I feel really dumb because I rely on you.
Wait. You feel dumb because you rely on me?
History lessons. And now if you don't know it, then I'm like, oh, I'm really in trouble.
Maybe you need to edit that part out that you feel dumb because
I was going to say, I think I'm fighting the Battle of the Bulge.
I've lost it. I've given up.
All right. So from this inspiring fact, we now head to Greenland, a country sparking the covetous desire of our dear president. What is it about this location, home to only 56,000 people, but a lot more humpback whales, polar bears, musk oxen, walruses, reindeer, and sea eagles, that seems to excite the POTUS fancy? Let's go there and find out what is the attraction.
Let's do it.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
So tonight's movie, Mark, I wanted to tell you how to say it in Greenlandic, except I'm not even sure I could pronounce it. It has a long name, and it's Ikkutaqwami Pilritsi Krut and Karlade. Happy New Year, gunpowder and love from 2019. And Mark, I have to say this before we get in. I'll talk about the actors who are in this. I read about this movie. I really wanted to watch it because I thought it would be so timely, but it was not available with English subtitles. So the poor director of this film, I hounded him for like months. And he kept telling me, we're doing a version. I seriously think this version was done just for us.
That's very nice of him.
It was incredible. But I think he'd love to get this movie more exposure. And in many ways, I'm curious what you think of it because I want to give it more exposure as well. Wasn't it kind of fun to listen to them speak? It reminded me, did you ever hear the natives, the Eskimos speak? It sounded so much like that.
It's interesting because seeing the actors and actresses in the movies and just seeing their physical and how they look, it really did remind me of the Eskimos that I worked with in Alaska.
Oh, totally. The physical features, everything, how they spoke.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. But you never picked up a single word that was recognizable. You know, in Spanish, in French, German, right? You hear words that were sometimes adopted into the English language, right? As people came over. But as they spoke in Greenlandic.
The one English word you could pick out? The F word.
And when they went ka-ching.
Ka-ching.
Yeah.
All right. So the first actor, he's Mickey. He's Monique Dorana Julin. And Monique Dorala Julin is only known for two films. This one in 2019, and then another one called Historien om Grønland og Danmark, which is the history of Greenland and Denmark. And it's from 2022. Monique is a Swedish Greenlandic actor, which is really interesting because he grew up in Sweden. So in this film, he plays a Greenlandic person who moves to Sweden and comes back. He's speaking in Swedish, and there's a lot of linguistic misunderstandings. His romantic interest is Nivi Pettersson. She plays Mona, and Nivi Pettersson is a Greenlandic actress and director who lives in Nuuk. And Nuuk is where this movie takes place, Nuuk, Greenland. It's the capital. And her career started with acting in 2014 in a Greenlandic horror film. And she's since starred in many other Greenlandic films. She also starred in a Swedish-Icelandic TV series called Thin Ice and a Danish TV series called Borgen. She wanted to portray different aspects of Greenland to the world, bring Greenland and the Greenland culture out more internationally. So she started her own production company called Navarra Films in 2017, and she has produced and directed many award-winning documentaries, short films and podcasts, which if you look at her, she looks like she's in high school.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
But during this time, while she starts a production company and makes award-winning films, she also earned her bachelor's degree in the Greenlandic language, literature, and media from the University of Greenland in 2018. What this speaks to me is she really has an affinity and a love for her country, and she wants others to know her country. What I find so interesting about this movie, Mark, and I'm curious what your thoughts were, it almost felt like someone took a camera and followed around some regular people for like a 2-week period. It didn't really feel like a film. I mean, it was a film, but it didn't feel like your normal exposition type film. It really felt more casual. We're just spying on some normal people.
There's also times where I felt it was almost documentary than film. At points, I wish I knew why did he really come to Greenland? Who was he trying to reconnect? Was he trying to reconnect with his Greenlandic heritage?
Mickey is coming from Sweden to visit Greenland, and he's coming to his cousin's house. It starts out very funny, but he's walking, gets picked up by this cab driver. So the taxi cab driver decides to teach him to greet his cousins how you would say hello to them in Greenlandic. But what he's really teaching him to say is, my name is Penis.
Yes.
And they practice it in the car. So when he shows up to meet his cousin, either they hadn't seen each other since they were very small, because they didn't initially recognize each other. Right. But here he shows up at the door, and the first thing he says is, my name is Penis. And the cousin brings him in to meet his three goofy friends. And that's the first thing he says is, my name is Penis. So they're in Nuuk, which is the capital. What is really funny is they make reference at the beginning that he's being sent there because it's a quiet place. It's peaceful. And later on, after he meets his cousin and spends 2 weeks with them, he's like, I can't wait to go back to the peace and quiet of Sweden. They're all saying, oh, Nuuk is happening. It's a real happening place. It isn't. But the cousin and his three friends, they are just like this goofy little gang that they are keep coming up with get-rich-quick schemes in stealing. They have these little crimes that they steal from the community center. We see them steal Christmas trees. We see them steal fireworks. And what I laugh about it, the community is so small, and half the people see them carrying Christmas trees.
I love when he sort of breaks it down for them. If we do this, 1 in 4 people are going to know we did it. Yes. Right? He kind of goes through this whole math problem.
But the girl who did that problem, I think her name was Lisa.
Yeah,
I think they said Lisa, it. And she's on the phone like the whole time. The whole movie.
Who is she talking to? We never find out. That was one of the things I wrote. It literally bothered me.
Well, there was one scene, and they have these little humorous things that carry through the whole movie. So Lisa is constantly on the phone. And what's funny, at one point, Lisa calls one and doesn't like what he's saying and calls the guy sitting right next to him. Exactly. Mickey shows up. He meets his cousin and his friends. They're right away upset with him because he went through duty free, and all he brought with him was apples that his mom asked him to bring. And they're like, no alcohol, no cigarettes. You know, he was kind of, I don't smoke and it's bad for your health. And they're like, no, we can sell these for double the amount of money here. And so that is referenced like a dozen times to the film. If you would have just brought the duty free, you know, we'd be doing well.
Yeah, this notorious gang is living hour to hour, and they have their little tin can that they put all their little money in.
They all share. They all throw their money in. What I like about them is, yes, they're thieves. They're stealing. And there's some references made. You're stealing from your community. This is a shared location, which it seems to bother them, but not really.
Right.
I mean, they throw all their money together and everyone trusts that it's there. And even though they have lots of money problems, I thought that was good. Another running joke, which I thought was hilarious, was they would break to a newscast. Like every time they stole the Christmas trees, and they break to a reporter who's there interviewing someone, where she will say, you know, we had a robbery at the community center for Christmas trees. We're going to talk to somebody on the street. We don't have time for that. Yeah. Let's go back to the studio.
Back to you.
Do it 3 times, and it's so funny. They have to make their rent. They want to have a party for Christmas. They want to have a party for New Year's. Slowly, we see that Mickey is starting to fall for Mona, but he believes that Mona is his cousin's girlfriend, so she's off limits. And they also have a running thing where Mickey's mother and his aunt, the pastor, have this Zoom call where they can see each other and they talk, and they're almost like narrators to what's going on. They're aware of everything that's happening. And every time Mickey's with some of the stolen goods carrying the Christmas tree, he runs into his aunt, the pastor. It's very funny. We meet Mona's ex-boyfriend, who has a terrible temper, and he's kind of a thug, and he wants his money. I guess they owe him money. Yep. So they have rent, they have parties, and they also have to pay the boyfriend back. Also, there's beautiful scenes of the Northern Lights. And Mona tells Mickey how they believe that the dead are playing soccer. Yeah. There's a soccer with a skull of a walrus.
Of a walrus.
And even he's like, what? Okay. Like, where do you get? But, and then he gives her the whole scientific explanation of what the Northern Lights are. No, they're just playing with a walrus skull up there.
You know, also, I think one of the funny things when they're coming up with all these different schemes, they even think about maybe they could make Mickey into a stripper.
Oh my gosh, that was so funny. And they look at him and go, yeah, no.
No. No.
He's good at cooking. They order food and go buy food, and he finds the things in their apartment and makes a nice meal, and they're like shocked. So they're like, hey, can you make Christmas dinner? And this is one of those linguistic misunderstandings. He's trying to explain to them that he's a vegetarian, and they give him money and they're like, yeah, we want you to make dinner. And they think he's agreeing to, and they want duck and turkey, pork crackling. And I love this. Tutu. Yes. Tutu, which is caribou. When they're trying to explain it to him, they're like, Tutu, Rudolph, the nose. So he makes them a vegetarian meal, and they're like, what? What is this? Where's the pork? Where's the tutu?
But I love his quote, though. I wrote this down. He said, because they're giving him a hard time about it. He goes, Christmas is the feast of heart, not about putting corpses on tables.
Yes. And every time they're asking him, where's the pork? The pig is home with his family celebrating the holiday. You know, the tutu's up in the mountains. So it's great. Anyway, so the ex-boyfriend wants his money. Janook, the cousin, tells a story on Christmas. They're all sitting around. He tells a story about how last Christmas he was in jail and he snuck out of jail and celebrated Christmas. And then on his way back, he gets into a taxi, which just happens to be driven by the deputy who picked him up and didn't recognize him. And he's like, so he's telling him, they're laughing, that the deputy who arrested him took him back to jail. But that comes into play because the boyfriend comes over, Mickey gives back him all the money, and they're like, we have no money for rent.
Thing left.
But they're even more upset. We have no money for alcohol for the party because they wanted to have a New Year's party. He's even trying to get him organized. You pay the boyfriend back, you pay your rent, and then maybe we have a party, or we have a party next year. And they are just not hearing it. So they end up having a party on New Year's. One of the guys gets drunk and starts shooting fireworks out the window. Upsets a couple who calls the police. Police show up, and they were calmed down, and they talk him down. But then the deputy does recognize Jonah and say, you owe us some time in jail. You love this because it's just very civil. Oh, guys, I have to go back to jail. Yeah. Sorry. Mickey, take care of the boys.
Yeah. Watch over them. And isn't that during that whole scene that it becomes clear that Mona is not Janook's girlfriend?
It becomes clear in two ways. One is first, the mom and the pastor, the sister, are talking, and he says he thinks she's his girlfriend. He doesn't know that they're half siblings. Right. They're half siblings. And then when Jenick is leaving, he says, watch my sister, Mona.
Well, you know, it's funny when the mom and her sister, whoever, that when they were having that conversation about half siblings, for a minute there, I thought they meant Mona and Mickey were half siblings. And I'm like, wait, what? Oh, wait, no, that's horrible.
I thought the exact same thing. Yeah. In fact, the first time I watched it, I thought that was the case. And I was like, wait, what? You're right. So now he's excited about it. They have stolen, I think it was 2 million Greenlandic. I don't know what it is in US, but they stole all of these fireworks. Yeah. And it becomes interesting because that's where they had the calculation. To sell these fireworks, we have to sell them to 2,000 people. They tell 4 people. 1 in 4 people will know we stole the fireworks. They start to use local kids to sell the fireworks for them. And then Mickey has a great realization. these fireworks are worthless. We can't sell them. We can't shoot them off, clearly. Right. Everyone will know, because everyone, they keep trying to think of ways to make money with them. And he's basically saying, you know, is there a way, they're worthless to us, is there a way we could get ourselves out of trouble using the fireworks? And Massey, he kind of is a local leader. Everyone says everything runs through Massey. Massey knows what's going on. But when he sits down and starts talking to the kids, he asks them if they've been confirmed. He's going to sit next to Jesus. You wanted your confirmation for the gifts and the party. I want to be with Jesus. So you don't know if he's just putting them on or not, because then he's like, I'm taking a collection for the community center. Yeah. I'm sure you really want to donate. And they give him all their money. Once again, every time they get any kind of money, they get rid of it. So ultimately, they figure out, they set up the ex-boyfriend. They say, you take all the fireworks. They're worth all this money. It's located in this storage unit. He goes and he's starting to unload them. And Massey comes and says, he's kicked out of the area for 10 years.
10 years, yeah. You better leave. Yep.
Okay, you solve the problem with paying off the boyfriend. You got to pay your rent. And they make a joke that there's a 10-year waiting list for apartments in Nook.
Right.
And they're like, no, it's 20 years.
Right.
So they really have to pay their rent. And that's where Mickey notices that the tin on the table that they've been putting their money in through the whole movie is a World War II tobacco tin.
Right.
And they ultimately sell it. What I do like is there's a kissing scene at the end. They're like kids. They're sledding. And there's Northern Lights. Was it festive, Mark?
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
You were paused there for a minute.
Yeah, I think it was a good movie. I would love to watch future films by this director or writer of the film.
Yeah, because I think this was a relatively, like, the first film that they had done.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of good elements into it. I do think it's a festive film, yes.
I do, too, because, I mean, they're not beating you over the head with it being Christmas time, but it is. There's a nice scene with Mona and Mickey decorating the tree.
And stars.
And so we'll learn some of the traditions that we will discuss, we see in this movie, which is helpful. It was kind of fun to see. You can clearly tell all of the people are concentrated on the coast there. Because you can see in the back, like, I think it's more sparse beyond that. The homes are kind of industrial-like. They're built for severe weather.
They're sturdy. They're not big, but they are sturdy. I mean, it really did remind me of the Alaskan coastline.
Yes, exactly. Right?
The look, the feel.
Yep. How about feeling? How'd you feel about this movie?
I was engaged, 100%. You know, I thought it was a cute little love story that was evolving. She sees him. Obviously, there's an attraction there. So watching how they get there.
The essential scene where he's painting and she's like, feel the brush. When they're filming, he's like right behind, like almost she could feel her breath on him. What I found is the three knuckleheads were endearing. I know that it's goofy and it's like this little gang. They would say the dumbest things and it just made me laugh.
Yeah, I agree. They were harmless.
Yes. Would you watch it in the future?
I think I would.
I would watch it again, but this is one of those movies, and I can't remember which one we had similar to like this. I wouldn't watch it for Christmas. I would watch it again because I was fascinated with Greenland. Yeah. You get to see it, like how snowy it is and how and just snow everywhere and hearing their language when they're talking to each other. I was just charmed by that. There is Christmas and the Christmas dinner scene is funny, but I wouldn't watch it for Christmas.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree.
And I would recommend it. Greenland is timely right now. Right. We're talking about it.
Right.
It's in the news. I would say, hey, you want to see, look at Greenland, you know?
I think it'd be a great idea to have someone do that. You know, there's a guy on Pennsylvania Avenue. Maybe he should watch
it. He should watch this film. And did you catch it when Mickey said, I heard that a Norwal and something else had a fight there? And I was thinking, oh, wow, are there Norwals there?
I know. I'd love to see a live Norwal. That'd be so cool.
All I could think of is, hope you find your dad, buddy.
Bye, buddy. Hope you find your dad.
Do you want to know how to say Merry Christmas in Greenlandic?
I am so excited to hear you say this.
Yulimi pilo oas resimi.
You know, I noticed that when they spoke in Greenlandic, not surprisingly, there's languages that are spoken that don't have similar sounds in English, right?
Yeah, right.
They make noise, like, you know, like, but this they sort of make on the R-A-C, it's like R-A-C.
Yeah, there's a lot of
And I was trying to do that, and I realized I had spittled all over myself.
Not unusual.
But you, yeah, right. Fair. Very fair. But you did a great job there.
Oh, yeah, I don't think so.
I think you did.
In Greenlandic, Merry Christmas is said as I just said it. The phrase translates to Happy Christmas. Julimi. Jule is pronounced like Yule. Emi is pronounced like Emi. And Polaritsi is pronounced like P-L-O-R-S-C. Christmas Greetings to Greenland is a radio program that began in 1932 and became a television broadcast in 1982. This broadcast is a way for the people in Denmark to send Christmas greetings and wishes to their loved ones in Greenland, featuring Christmas songs, music, and greetings. It's called Merry Christmas, and this fosters a connection between the two countries within this common kingdom to create bridges, since many Greenlanders live in Denmark and many Danes live in Greenland. It's the oldest broadcast of its kind still in existence. Because if you think about it, started in 32, radio, goes to TV in 1982. It's Merry Christmas show. I think that's another show that our president ought to watch as well. He should see Christmas greetings, so he can say, maybe we need to foster a connection between the United States and Greenland.
What a concept. Are there any customs in Greenland?
Yes, there are
some
great. Let's talk about some of the customs.
Is Norwals involved?
I wish. I'd just hang a Norwal on my tree.
Really?
Christmas is celebrated in Greenland in the same way it is in Denmark, which would make sense. Mm-hmm. But they kind of add their own unique tradition. One we saw in the movie, it's an orange star that they make from orange and yellow paper, and they put a light on it, and they shine from the windows. And it's called the Greenlandic Christmas Star. You'll see them used as decorations, even on that national Christmas show. In the movie, twice it's referenced. First, we see them put the star up on the tree, and it's huge for the tree, which was funny. Another time, Mickey is walking on the street and trying to distract his aunt and says, "Have you seen the Christmas stars?"
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. It does.
So the star was introduced in Greenland by the Hearn Hunters. Hearn Hunters were a Christian brotherhood that came to Greenland in 1733, and they were active there until 1900.
Wow.
So many of these Greenlandic traditions are attributed to these Hearns, including the Greenlandic written language. And the tradition is that these Christmas stars and other decorations are only removed on January 6th. Which some people do here in the States. Greenland, winter season marked by unique traditions that have been passed down through the generations. One of these customs is called Mettertut, which occurs on the Epiphany, which is January 6th. This tradition is a blend of both the indigenous Inuit culture, and that's that Eskimo connection because they're Inuit as well, and the Danish influence. And so it offers a glimpse of how they've combined their heritage. Because if you think about it, the Danes and the Inuits look nothing like each other. It's odd to think that they have combined together into one country.
Why I love our podcast is just getting exposed to it. Like I said, the last whatever months it's been, this whole talk about Greenland and the United States, I never really thought to myself, what do people from Greenland look like?
Yeah.
What do they talk about? Now we're going to talk about their culture. So this episode may get picked up by 60 Minutes.
I think we're going to send it to the president. So Mettertut has its roots in indigenous Inuit culture. These mysterious characters, they're known as Mittertalk in singular. So Mittertut is in plural. Mittertalk is singular. They knock on doors, enter homes, and communicate without words. Instead, they use humorous gestures and movements that correspond to their disguises. People will playfully tease them and try to get their neighbors, whoever it is, to break character and talk. At the end of their visit, they're rewarded with cakes, candy, cigarettes. Mittarnek translates to cutting faces, which refers to the practice of distorting the face with strings stretched from ear to ear when masks aren't used. So if someone doesn't have a mask, they'll stretch. So they have those one of those really creepy smiles. The masks tend to portray a mix of traditional scare spirits and contemporary themes. And it reflects both their cultural heritage and modern influence. A lot of hairspray and spray tan next Christmas. And how about their meat menu? As we saw referenced again in the movie, we saw the Greenlandic stars and also the meat menu. They like roast pork, duck, Greenlandic lamb, musk oxen, or reindeer, elk, grouse, or whale, and it all depends on where you live. Lamb is popular in the South, reindeer in the North, and despite its connection to Santa, reindeer meat is popular and is described as quite tasty. As we heard, it's called tutu in Greenlandic. Reindeer is one of the animals that people hunt, so it's really a common part of their diet. You'll go to the supermarket and you can buy some tutu. And reindeer burgers are quite a common Greenlandic dish and is prepared thinly sliced raw tutu, dried, fried, salted, smoked, or added to soups. And for Christmas specifically, many Greenlandic households will make barbecued reindeer, and they like to serve it with potatoes, a brown sauce, red cabbage, and red currant jelly.
That seems so wrong.
My stomach is churning.
Well,
I'm like,
no, I mean, just that they're eating reindeer. Like, can't they just, can't they just call it like caribou and lie?
However, reindeer isn't the only unusual meat you'll find on Christmas dinner tables in Greenland. This is an interesting one, and it's fairly controversial because they have whale, seal, and seabirds on the menu. And although eating whale and seal meat is fairly controversial around the world, it has deep cultural roots with the Inuits in the same way that they ate a lot of seal when I was in Alaska as
Absolutely.
Well. But before they had freezers, what they would do is to preserve the food during the summer months is they would bury it because the frost layer is down there so they could survive through the long winters. What you would do is you'd remove as much air as possible from the seal skin before it's sewn up and sealed with seal fat. It is then hidden in a heap of stones with a large rock placed on top to keep the air out. They take this meat that we've described, allow it to ferment for 3 months. Then, so once you allow it to ferment, then you put it in under the ground. It allows you to store it for months without spoiling. And also, they say that it results in a dish that's rich in vitamins and nutrients. And it's a delicacy, but it's considered unusual because of the preparation, and it has a strong smell because you think about it. First, they allow it to ferment. Then they put it underground. What's really sad, and this is where I say it's got controversial, even in Greenland, is because it's a result of climate change. What's happening is, first off, they have refrigerators and freezers now. They do so. But some people want to do it the traditional way and let it ferment and dig it underground. But these rising global temperatures, what's happened is a couple people have tried to do it traditionally and ended up getting sick and dying from it because
the bacteria
grew because it wasn't frozen enough. They call this kibiek. Kibiek, a strong symbol of their identity. That's why people want to keep it traditional and they feel like it's not as good to put it in a freezer, a modern freezer. It's reserved for special occasions, weddings, birthdays, and Christmas. But, you know, some authorities are warning against doing it because of this fear.
When I was in Alaska, we had, sometimes they would use whale and seal blubber and body components to season other food. And it was delicious.
Eskimo ice cream I had, and that was with blubber.
I didn't know until after the fact that that's what they cooked our salmon in that we caught.
You hate to see some of these traditions go away. But I understand. The glaciers are melting. There's probably that frost layer is not as cold as it used to be, you know? So last in Greenland, they believe that Santa Claus lives there. There was a popular Danish TV series in 1989 called Elves in Greenland, and it claimed that Santa Claus lives in Greenland. Specifically, they even say he's in Spragle Bay, close to Umanak. It's on an ice sheet. He has a North Pole location, a subsidiary, but he really lives in Greenland because it's easy there to get around in all the directions. So they have this tradition that once the distribution of all the gifts are over, Santa has one last duty on December 24th. Air Greenland waits at the Nuuk Airport with a helicopter. When Santa arrives, he gets on the chopper with his last presents and he flies Santa, which is Queen Ingrid of Denmark, her hospital in the middle of Nuuk, where he gives away presents to those children who cannot be home on Christmas Eve.
That's really tender.
Isn't that great?
That's very sweet.
And they go in, and I saw pictures, you know, they get him on the helicopter, fly him to the hospital. It's awesome.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
Mark, that was Angular Langa by Small Time Giants. Now, Small Time Giants is an alternative rock band from Greenland. This song was sung in English. It wasn't in Greenlandic. Besides Greenland, the band is also popular in Denmark. In the way this song came to be, Denmark's radio wanted the band to play Last Christmas, the Wham song, on the Christmas Greetings from Greenland show.
Oh, there you go.
In 2016. And they said, look, we don't want to do a cover. Just write our own Christmas song. So they had been celebrating Christmas in Denmark for the last few years. So they decided to write a song. And this song is about longing for their home in Greenland. They talk about the silence, the darkness, the sound of the snow. It was also the first time that they had released a song partly sung in Greenlandic to show that their home is Greenland.
Yeah.
And when it was released, this Christmas-themed single reached number one and became the most downloaded song on iTunes in Denmark. Now, the exact English translation of Angular Langa isn't explicitly stated in the lyrics that I could tell, but it suggests some kind of meaning related to Christmas or the holiday season. We don't know exactly what it means.
It's Christmas dinner.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Food they put out for Christmas Eve.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Most of your major food preparation holidays, Christmas.
Eat it.
Puts out food for Santa.
Eat it. If it's getting cold, reheat it.
There's no chili. No, chili's not a festive food.
Have a banana.
Once again, I hope you've got your appetite up because we're back to our exploration, trying to find out more and to learn about our Latvian treat for this year,
pierogi.
Pierogi. We learned how to say it last time. Pierogi. Well, guess what? Other than watching the movie and learning some of the trivia and the customs, I didn't know much about Latvia, you know? So we thought we'd find if we knew an academic that knew about Latvia, maybe was a Latvian expert. Well, we didn't find a Latvian expert. We found an academic in our own backyard.
That's right.
From Chicago.
That's right.
Who is assistant professor at National Lewis University. And she went and lived with her family in Latvia. Lauren Anderson.
I hope you guys enjoy this. She's awesome. What a delightful individual. It's just a pleasure to that she took the time to talk to us. So thank you, Lauren. And teach us,
Just so our listeners know, explain what you do.
Most of my career, I have taught English to folks that are coming to the United States from children through adults, immigrants, refugees, anyone who is developing English language fluency.
So you are not a professor of Latvia or Latvian history or studies?
No, I was connected to Latvia because I applied to be an English language fellow with the State Department. They send English language teachers to different countries all around the world to be an ambassador and learn from the different language teaching programs they have in other places and bring our expertise. So I was randomly placed in Latvia and I got to be there, and that's sometimes the best way to really understand other people and cultures and parts of the world. I got to move there with my family.
When you first get the notice and they say, hey, you're going to Latvia, what was your reaction?
I knew where it was. That was about it. And I just started Googling to find out what life would be like there. And there was a lot of explaining to family and friends that it's a little country. It's the Baltics. It's right next to Russia, right between Estonia and Lithuania, if you've heard of those.
What was it about the country that your family really embraced? What did you enjoy the most?
One thing we really loved about Latvia, it's a very nature-based place. You are 5-minute train ride from being at a beautiful beaches and forests. That's really celebrated and emphasized in the cultures. People really value those traditions that connect you to nature. We just really loved that part of it.
It did seem like the people were more green conscious.
People just like being in nature, and I do think people are extremely resourceful. You know, a lot of people know how to forage. Some of that is history and the identity of the Latvian people, and some of it is the resourcefulness that they had to develop during the Soviet Union and the fall of the Soviet Union, and I think times were really hard, and I think people did develop skills that you have to have in those times where you need to be really resourceful.
Overall, the impression for you and for your family was a positive one of Latvia?
We loved it. We really did. We had a great experience. You know, I was thinking about Christmas there, and they have Christmas markets. They have just a lot of warm coziness. Everywhere you'd go, they'd have a big bowl of those crunchy gingerbread cookies, and you could just grab a few. Latvia is very big on singing. Actually, that's their number one advice for folks for how to survive the winter is join a choir and put your voice in song in harmony with other people.
Singing and eating, two of my most favorite things to do.
What food did you like there? So Mark and I are big on the food. We love the food in these countries.
I hope I don't disappoint you too much when I tell you that I'm a vegetarian.
Oh, no.
No, not at all.
I loved the food there. Again, like you were saying, Bob, did my friends and family, had they heard of Latvia, everyone's like, what are you going to eat there? Because lifelong vegetarian. But actually, the food was delicious, very connected to nature. And yeah, I love the food. When I would do school visits, I would get to go into the school cafeteria and eat. And then you'd, you know, go through the line and get your little lunch. At the tables, they would have huge bowls with piles of shredded beets and then shredded carrots, kind of like a slaw. They probably were like, what's wrong with this woman? But I would just, I was eating so much of, again, like beets and carrots. There was so many delicious rye bread things. They had like what they called beer snacks, and they were these little strips of rye bread that they would deep fry in like a ton of garlic. Those were incredible.
Oh, man.
It was so good. They also went the other way with the rye bread and used leftover stale rye bread to make rye bread pudding. Sort of bread pudding-ish, but kind of like a cold dish. I loved it. My kids weren't so into that. There was a dessert called Buberts. It's like a semolina pudding with like a rhubarb sauce around it. That was incredible. We ate delicious mushrooms, sorrel soup, a lot of cabbage, so much dill. Everything was so much dill. Other people really loved all the fish. We went to a St. Martin's Day feast in November, and someone had made kind of like an eel dish. My kids loved it. They said they had never had eel before, and my kids are fairly picky. They're not like adventurous eaters, but they said it was delicious.
Because you're vegetarian, you yourself didn't have the pierogi, but your kids did. They've endorsed it for us. They say it's good.
Before we started the recording, Lauren shared with us that her children's favorite thing is the bacon pies. Or bacon, what did you call them? Something different. We've been calling them bacon pies, but
I was thinking of it like the bacon buns. It comes like a roll. There, they said there was speck that they put in it. And I like speck being, I think, slightly different than bacon, but that was like the word they use for the meat in there. But yeah, my kids loved that.
We know your kids like the pierogi. That's a ringing endorsement. If they can eat eel, we want to be able to find like a true recipe to really make it. And now you've raised this question of speck. Like, is speck different than bacon? And do we have to figure out what exactly speck is and how we get that? And
it gets more complicated.
Our adventure continues. Is there anything about Latvia that you could leave us with that our listeners also, and we'd love to hear about Latvia?
In my experience, Latvian folks could be a bit reserved. Maybe there's a bit less small talk, or some of the things we're used to in the U.S. to show someone that we're trying to be welcoming. Everywhere you go, everyone was very welcoming, but definitely you have to open yourself up, because I think folks there, again, it's a quieter, maybe less of that kind of like small talk to make people comfortable, but I do think once you break through that, people there were really so excited to show you their traditions and show their country, and really happy to have people partake in that.
You said the State Department thought Latvia would be a good place for a family.
Yeah, it's very safe, and I think that they, since I was traveling with my family, they were looking for a good place to place a family, and it definitely was that. It's a great, great place for kids. Kid culture there, I was really impressed by how often you'd see kids, you know, fairly young, maybe 8, 9, just public transit on their own. You'd go out at night and feel very safe, and there would be a group of 12-year-olds walking down the street at 10:30 at night, and it was just a great place to be a kid.
It's trivia.
It's trivia.
Trivia.
It says, I want to quote the Bible, "Thy shalt not covet thy neighbor's country," but you can covet your neighbor's stickers.
Absolutely.
So,
fair game.
Not only do our stickers expect to be coveted, they enjoy it. They're tramps. They want you to desire them as much as our fearless leader lusts after Greenland. All it takes for you to have them is to answer a trivia question. They are that loose. And we have a harem of stickers just for your choosing. But first, you need to get past our festive foreign fun fact. All right, Mark.
Yes.
Greenland. So many interesting details. Really, so much more connection to the United States that I had no idea. But we have to remain focused on this budding romance between our two countries. So think about this. We're going to ask you about, if we added Greenland to the U.S., it would increase our landmass by 22%.
Wow.
It is that big. But if it were a state, it is 10 times smaller than Wyoming,
wow,
our current state with the smallest population. So we gain 22%, but it's super, super small. It would be super, super small. We thought to question you about the first time that we courted Greenland. I bet you didn't even know this. In 1946, when the Nazis had invaded Denmark and it fell, the United States occupied Greenland during World War II from 1940 to 1945. And after the end, we kind of liked it. We said, we'll purchase it from you for $100 million. And guess what they said? No.
No.
And that was $100 million in 1940s dollars, I guess. Yeah. And afterward, we behaved just like a jilted boyfriend. We didn't tell the Danes, but we had built a top secret nuclear base to house 600 missiles beneath the ice sheets of Greenland. Think about that. The Danes, their country, they don't even know about it. We build this secret nuclear base there, run by a portable nuclear reactor, which, you know, maybe the Danes could have told us. The ice is not very stable. So guess what? We abandoned it and we left the nuclear reactor there. And we just assumed that the chemical and radioactive waste, we remained under the ice forever.
Oh my God.
But now, because of the melting glaciers and climate change, it's going to surface and enter the environment in 2100. And remember, we're asking them to come join us.
I think this is interesting and maybe gives a little bit of foundation to, like, maybe they're not so interested in
and why they maybe would be. Yeah.
Right, right.
And finally, another example of our stalker behavior that we've continued.
Oh, no.
We crashed one of our B-52 bombers carrying 4 nukes into the North Star Bay in Greenland in 1968. The explosives aboard the plane detonated.
Oh, my
And
goodness.
The nuclear payload ruptured.
Oh, my.
And it contaminated the whole area. The U.S. government reported that all of the debris had been recovered and destroyed. But in 2008, the BBC reported that one of the bombs, there were 4 bombs, remember, one of them has never been recovered and remains somewhere stuck under the ice on the coast of Greenland. So we have an interesting, very colorful history. And all of those things that I've just relayed for you, none of those relate to the question I'm going to ask you, which I think is nice because those all seem pretty nasty on our
part.
They
seem really negative.
They do.
They sound like nasty Mark.
Yeah. Yes, Dark Mark.
Dark Mark, yes.
Dark Mark lives in, well, no, in the U.S., I guess. But no, we're going to ask just kind of a nicer one about Greenland's current suitor, Denmark. The Danes have an elite Navy unit that is comparable to our Navy SEALs. It patrols and protects northern Greenland, and it has a feature that makes it one of a kind in the world. What makes it unique? If it helps, the name of the unit is Sirius. If you know what propels this force around the island, you let us know, and we'll send you one, two, three, or more of these sticky little deviants. Honestly, they have no shame, and we can't wait to unload them because they love to be seen, touched, and slapped.
So when you say their name Sirius, as in, are you serious, or is it different Sirius?
The celestial Sirius.
Okay. Celestial, don't want to play games with our festive fans.
No. You know, they've watched the details.
That's right.
All right, Mark, we got to go. So yes. I need to give you, poor Jake's got to get home to his baby. Here we go. This is our quote. Chelsea Burden says, thinking sweet thoughts and musing on the strange intermingling of joy and sorrow, which are the very heart and soul of the beautiful season we call Christmas.
Wow. That's pretty deep.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mark, join us next time as we head south of the equator to a place that is inaccurately named Chile, which it's not, and we watch a Christmas-ish and a Sundance Prize-winning film from 2009 called The Maid, and you can find it to rent on the Oscilloscope website or on Amazon Prime. You can find it, rent it, The Maid. Join us next time. We've made it to season 3 of the Fest and Foreign Film Fans. So because the world has more than 48 countries, we continue. And we've matured like fine cheese. We're sharper, we're older, and we're a lot smellier.
Good night, Bob.
Good night, Mark.
Actually, we're done.
Done.
It's over. Over, over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over. It's over. It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
Sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.